For the Meat Poultry Podcast, I'm Ryan McCarthy, Digital Media Associate Editor. Recently, we featured Jeff Saville, a Texas A&M meat professor, on what it's like having meat education in person during the COVID-19 pandemic. We wanted to further explore this topic with this week's guest, Lynn Knipe, a processed meats extension specialist at The Ohio State University. Knipe takes us through the process and procedures that the faculty took in Columbus to hold on-campus meat classes. He also discusses what it's been like for his extension programs that feature many people that are already working in the meat industry. Lastly, Knipe explains some other process trends he's seen during COVID-19, including a larger interest in on-the-farm slaughtering and meat processing, and what needs to be done to do it safely. We hope you enjoy the podcast on what meat processing education looks like and might continue to look like for the rest of 2020. Lynn, give our listeners a little background on yourself and your role at The Ohio State's Meat Science Extension.
Yes, I am a processed meats extension specialist here at Ohio State. And I work primarily with the further processing industry, doing various training programs related to cooking and food safety. I do HACCP training. I used to do some on-site processing short courses, and have actually switched. Last two or three years, I've been working on some online courses, and these I'm needing to get out, but fortunately some of them are ready enough that if our classes happen to be canceled, these would work well. I think these online modules would work very well for our students as well. But I just had gotten a question from one of our processors here that had an issue with an oven that shut off during the night. They're trying to determine if the product is safe. So I get involved in some food safety assessments. And so just a variety of things. But one of the options that I had when I was offered a job here was to teach a processed meats class. Now, in some areas, some universities, they don't like the extension people to be teaching because they feel like that keeps them out of the extension arena during that time. But So yes, I'm doing a little bit of both.
The next thing I wanted to ask you, though, Lynn, was how has the Ohio State Meat Science program changed its classroom for the fall semester compared to previous years? It sounds like you've had some experience teaching stuff online, but I'm sure for the whole program itself, it's got to be a pretty big change.
Well, actually, as you can imagine, with meat science courses, there's a lot of hands-on activities. And so those can actually be difficult to do online. And so this fall, I'm doing the lab portions now for our processed meats class. Someone else is doing the lecture part, and they are doing that online. We had split this up, and I agreed to do the labs, and I just could not really think of a very easy way to do those without having the people in the facility and using the equipment and trying things out for themselves. We have, from what I can come up with, we've got three other classes in our meat science program that are being held in the facility. We have an introductory class that is not, it is online. So basically, we just have one out of four of our classes that's really online right now. And our intention was that we would, half of my class is online, but our intention was that we would continue to teach these classes as long as the university will allow us to. And so it is a different, some people refer to our hallways as being kind of like a ghost town. I don't know a lot about the other classes we have in animal science, and I'm guessing majority of those are lecture-based anyway. So I think that's part of the reason why we see quite a few less students in the hallways. But I have to admit, the lab that I'm teaching, we do have fewer students this semester. I do know of one student, as an example, that apparently struggled a little bit last spring when we were forced to go to online classes. And this student had a little bit of a problem with the online concept. And they had been telling me they were taking this class this fall, and they're not enrolled. So I think we've had some students who have taken some time off, or I'm not quite sure what they do, but who don't like the online concept. But we are, we've got, the university's doing random testing. Our test here a week ago or so didn't look good. Our off-campus students were at about 11% of the total of those tested were positive, and it looked like it was going in the wrong direction. That has now dropped to below 5. So we feel like that is going in the right direction, but other than dealing with the masks, and we're, you know, everybody's supposed to be taking their temperatures in the morning and documenting that on a website. The masks are a headache, and I mean they're a problem. Especially the other thing that we do a lot of in meat science courses is sample our mistakes.
Right.
So we are often eating products, and that gets to be a challenge. We basically encourage the students to take samples and go to their. We have assigned spaces at tables that have been measured out to be 6 feet apart. And of course they're all required to wear a mask when they're not eating, but then when they sit down at their tables, then they can take their mask off and eat. But so it's really different, but I think I should maybe knock on wood, but I think we're doing okay. And so we just take 1 week at a time and see what transpires.
Do you think the students understood the severity of everything with COVID after they saw, you know, a lot of the outbreaks and everything that happened in March and April inside the plants, of taking all the precautions seriously so they could have, you know, in class during this time?
Well, I have been, I'm not sure. I have been pleasantly surprised, though, that because we were prepared, we were given instructions on what to do if students refuse to put a mask on, all of these plan Bs, you know. I've not seen any issues with our students. Now, when they have their masks on, and I guess when you have a mask on, social distancing isn't quite as big of an issue, but the students will, when we're talking about things, they will stand around fairly close to each other. But I think we're dealing with students from primarily an agricultural background. And so I do think they take these things more seriously, but I have personally been very pleased with our students and how they've reacted and how they're handling this. I haven't seen any issues yet. And so it almost feels like it's getting to be back to normal, but so.
Gotcha. Can you tell me a little bit about your own concerns? Did you feel pretty comfortable going back into the classroom with your position, with everything that was going on and everything that the university set up?
Yes, I think the way the university has done a lot, as far as we have stairwells that are designated for up and down. We have spaced out. We used to have, and I'm actually in the food science building here, we used to have a lot of chairs and little tables set around where students could work. And we even had an eating area in our lobby that students would gather. And it was a great thing for the students. That has all been taken away with minor exceptions of a few tables here and there. But the university has made they've really worked hard over the summer to try to get set up. And so I was feeling pretty comfortable. I don't know whether I should admit this, but I am in the first age range of potential risk or higher risk. But I don't, it doesn't worry me and it doesn't bother me. And so I really do feel like we are making a lot of serious efforts to help control this. Now, I think the one thing that's happened with the students, and I don't know whether you followed other universities, but there was a lot of early partying, especially off campus. And of course, we heard about it here first, and I think that it was happening, the same response was happening from other universities, but we started suspending students that were caught in large groups. And at first I thought, well, we'll see if that has any impact. But I think some of the parents realized too that they had to crack down on what their children were doing. So a lot of that seems, we had over a couple of hundred students that were suspended early on the first week. And that really seems to have slowed things down here.
Hear from the experts in the industry on the Meat and Poultry Podcast. The latest news, trends, technologies, and people in the world of meat and poultry processing delivered right into your ears. Listen every Friday and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know, I was curious, Lynn, I talked to a couple other educators, and I was curious what you think COVID-19 will do for meat education in the U.S. What do you think it's going to look like now going forward after something like this? Because like we've discussed, you've got to still have your labs and your experience ahead of time of doing stuff like you would do in a plant or a facility.
Well, I haven't given that much thought, but I expect we may see, this may get to be our new normal. I do think the students like to have in-person classes. My sense is that they would prefer this. One of the challenges we've had, that we've noticed, a student may have, like my lab, and within a half an hour, they have an online course. Well, then they have to find some place to go to receive that, and they don't have time to go home. So we've had some complications like that, and I know that would be something that would have to be worked out. But I do know of some faculty who have some concerns, maybe some medical issues or whatever. And I think this is the best option for them, is to do their class online. But I just feel like there's so many things that you can't really accomplish with online. It may be the best thing we have under the circumstances, but I do believe most people that I interact with feel like we really need to get back to the face-to-face. Now you're bringing up another issue with, particularly with my extension program. I've pretty much had to stop all of my face-to-face courses because in many cases, people are traveling from several of my courses, people travel from other states. They're working for large companies, and the companies have said, no, you're not going to travel. And so I am trying to wrap my head around this, about the possibility of making some of these other programs virtual courses. And that's just been a real challenge for me to, just because of what I feel like we accomplish when the people are here on site. And then some people worry, okay, once we redo some of these courses and people get used to it, will they not want to come back later when we decide to do them on campus? But I'm not concerned about that. I first have to worry about how do we rework some of these programs and accomplish the same things. Because we like to do a lot of group breakout sessions. And I know you can do that with Zoom and other programs, but I just don't know that it's quite the same. I have been involved with several online courses that other people have done, more short course type programs for the industry. And I've not, I've just been very uncomfortable about doing it myself. I just don't feel like the people get the same value that they would when they're on site.
Right. Tell me a little bit about what your extension course usually looks like when you're doing it in a normal period pre-COVID.
Well, each one of them is a little different, but usually, of course, we have to have a lecture portion where we're providing some content. And then depending upon, like, if it's HACCP training, they break out into groups and they develop their own HACCP plans. And then we come back and we talk some more about some more principles, and then they break out again. In the other courses, it's kind of the same thing. And many times we have some invited speakers, depending upon the content that come in. So this gives people a chance to one-on-one. Now, probably my biggest course that we do, I mean, we have people from USDA, we have people from the industry, sometimes the supplier industry. And it's, I think the out in the hall conversations with some of these people and over lunch and whatnot, plus just the questions you could ask during the presentations is so valuable. And I just don't know how we can accomplish that same thing. I know we could have chat. We have a chat box and those sorts of things, but I just feel that it's difficult. Plus, we have some courses, most of our courses are probably 2 days long. And I'm still, you know, really dealing with how can we do a 2 day class virtually and keep people's attention.
Sure.
I'm working with some of our presenters now on how to redo these. And I've seen when I was sitting in on some other classes, the majority of the people would have their video turned off. Sorry.
Right. So you couldn't see their face.
Right. And you really couldn't tell. Now I can understand. I've done this myself in a long program like that. You need to get another cup of coffee or go to the bathroom or whatever. And maybe it's just as easy to turn it off. But when people have it turned off for 3 or 4 hours at a time, you don't even really know, are they even there? You know, you just really don't get a good feel. And so I think that's one of the challenges that I see is how do we do these programs and make them worth some, you know, their time. When we're dealing with people's attention span, the other things they have going on in their life and whatnot. So.
Right. Yeah. I was curious, you know, since you're part of the extension and you see a lot of not only training students to get into the industry, but you're also seeing people come back to get more education. What you're kind of hearing from companies and what they're looking at for the coronavirus for their employees or for food safety now after they've gone through such a hectic time in the spring?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not sure I have. I really have not talked to people about that. I really can't. We have been surveying our industry in Ohio. We tend to have a larger group of further processing companies that more so than slaughter. And so we've been trying to just survey them and see how's it going. Are you able to continue operating and just some of these issues. But I really have not had any feedback from it. I haven't really asked about what they're looking for the future. And I'm not sure I can't really answer that question for you. Sorry.
Sure. What have you been hearing from them otherwise, if it hasn't been those types of things? What have you been hearing from them?
Well, when we were doing the survey back in March and April, our Ohio companies were very, very busy. They were overwhelmed. I mean, we were hearing all the stories in the media about, you know, retail stores running out of meat and that sort of thing. Some of our larger plants had some issues at times. with getting enough raw materials. But some of that was just because they were relying on the large packers for that. The medium to smaller companies, and we have 200 or 300 smaller companies in Ohio. They were getting tired, actually. They were working 24/7 and of course they were enjoying all the business, but right. struggling to get help and have enough help and that sort of thing. But I think things have settled down, I think, for the most part. But I do believe our industry in Ohio is a little bit different than the large slaughter plants farther west. I think we've had a few less issues.
Okay. You know, I was curious. I was looking through something that you had tweeted out a few weeks ago. It was about the Farm Science Reviews coming up. I know that's usually a pretty big event for you and everybody else. But what is that going to look like this year compared to a lot of years? I've heard that sometimes you can get up to 100,000 people in person to that. So what's that going to kind of look like this year?
Well, I don't know that I grew up with it. When I was in high school, our VOAG classes would go there, you know, and this is just kind of in our blood. And it's surprising for a state. There are states that have more agriculture than Ohio that don't have their own program. But so it is kind of a thing of pride. But it's very much a traditional thing. But what I'm also expecting, a lot of these, particularly your more progressive farmers, they're all on the internet. I mean, they're very computer savvy. And so I'm expecting we're going to have a lot of people participating. The other thing they have a lot of, I mentioned my experience in high school. We would get high school students from all over the state. We would also even get some, I can remember some students coming through some of our exhibits from West Virginia and maybe Western Pennsylvania, some of those areas. But I'm assuming, I don't know, but I'm assuming the schools may be, a lot of these programs are going to be available online. And so I'm assuming we'll get some activity from some of the high school students as well. But It's really hard to predict how this is going to work out, but I'm expecting that we'll have a pretty good response.
Gotcha. There was one thing I saw when I was looking over one of the releases of you'll be talking about on the farm slaughtering and processing. Has that been something that you've been reached out to by farmers and processors recently with excess meat now?
Well. Yes, we have gotten quite a number. I think this has happened all over the country. We've gotten quite a few requests from two sides. One is people wanting to start their own business. Mm. And we've tried to help them as much as we can. Now, I had an interesting comment from somebody else who had some other experience with this. And they said, well, a lot of these people are sort of what they call tire kickers. And they're just kind of checking out to see, is this something they want to get into? But there has been a lot of interest in people, even producers, people who are saying, wow, I'm not happy with, either how long it's taking to get animals slaughtered and processed or, maybe what they're getting for them. They want to do their own processing. But we're also the other group of people that we're concerned about is people going out and slaughtering behind the barn. We're expecting, and I think there's a lot more of that going on right now than what we have any idea of. And so that's what that presentation that we're planning to do with the Farm Science Review is about, is to help people. Well, actually, we talk so much about the concerns. You don't have a meat inspector there to check out the safe, is the animal healthy? Are they using the right procedures? So we're trying to lay out some of that. At one point I realized, gee, if after I read this, I would probably be turned off on wanting to try that. But I think that we're just trying to make sure people are aware of all the issues that they could be involved in. And as part of what we did, now it's been a while back and we don't have it available quite yet, but we actually did slaughter a couple of hogs on a farm out in Western Ohio. I videotaped some right and wrong ways to do some things. And now I have to say my experience, even though I grew up, you know, with a small slaughter facility, my background is more with the further processing, you know, making the ham and bacon and those products. But I still have had some experience with slaughter. But also with my background with food safety, that was the thing I was really reinforcing, was there's a lot of things you need to look for, you need to be careful of. And we're even trying to make sure people aren't, we have rules and regulations about slaughtering for multiple people and then giving it away or trying to sell the product, or, you know, we're trying to caution people that they could get in trouble. And we've had some history of that. We happen to have a state meat inspection program here in Ohio, and they have had a lot of history in the past. They've caught quite a number of people slaughtering animals. Some of the most recent things that were happening, I think, is perhaps with some of the Middle Eastern populations that we have in our bigger cities. Mm-hmm. So that's one advantage to small meat processors in Ohio. We have some very large cities that aren't that far from the rural areas, so these small processors do quite well.
Right.
But that also means that we have some fairly large Middle Eastern populations. And there's been a number of cases where farmers would allow these people to come out, they would sell them a lamb or a goat, and then let them slaughter it back behind their barn. And of course, I think how our Department of Agriculture gets wind of this is that the meat processors, there's so many of them that I think they are actually kind of turning these people in. But so we've had a lot of concerns in the past. We're just trying to prevent this from being an issue in the future. Just try to warn people, okay, feel free to go ahead and do it, but just know that these are the issues that you might be dealing with.
Okay. Lynn, before I let you go, is there any other, you know, some further processing trends that you're really looking at now? Now that we're kind of 6 months into COVID and everything, and is there anything that you've seen that people need to be looking out for in the next few months? Or is it kind of similar to what you were saying earlier, where the industry has kind of gone through everything and they've figured it out now?
Well, I think what we might see, if this answers your question, I think we may see a shift. And I don't know exactly how this will play out, but to more dependence on some smaller processors. I think the industry has, and this may be a regulatory thing or may come from legislation, I'm not sure. But I think we've realized that there are some risks when the companies get too large. But I think, and I think the bigger issue is probably the labor that's involved, and maybe the understanding. There's a person I work with here, and I won't give the person's name out, but they made a wonderful comment. I thought, we don't know, when we get these large plants and we have these hundreds of people going in and out, and we can do everything we can to separate them and put plexiglass panels between them. The point they made is we don't know where these people go when they leave the plant. And I think that's some of the concern, that when you have, there aren't that many people in the U.S. that really want to work that hard and work in those conditions. I think we might see some more movement toward robotics. This is a little bit out of my area, but I'm just kind of guessing that, because I do think the issue has been the requirement for so much labor. And I think robotics would help ease that a little bit.
Okay. Well, Lynn, I won't keep you too much longer. That's all I've got for this podcast. So thank you for taking the time out today, Lynn, and take care.
Well, thank you.
Make sure to check out the latest stories from the magazine and online at meatpoultry.com. Also follow us on social media on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, all by searching at Meat Poultry. And if you like what you heard, please leave a rating and review. It really helps us. All right, that's it for this time, folks. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.